Welcome to Wolfpack Woman. I'm Denise.
And I'm Susie.
And today we have Sara Ver. I wanted to say it in my Italian accent. She is a coach from Behold Retreats. And she is here to tell us a bit about shrooms. Getting high, clearing the energies, another form of energy clearing, right? So over to you, Sara. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me, Susie and Denise. It's a pleasure to be on here, and I'm excited to share what I know about the magic mushrooms.
Well, I've never done it, and we were just saying before, Susie hasn't done it. I think we would benefit from it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
you should come on one of our retreats. Well, I'll let you decide at the end of this conversation.
Because my friends, they do it regularly, ayahuasca, and they've done, what's the frog one? I always forget.
UFO.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5-MeO-DMT.
It's not Cambo.
Oh, Cambo. Yeah, that's a little bit different. It's less it's not psychedelic, but it is a purifying type of medicine.
Yeah, it's like a purge, isn't it?
You don't get any sort of psychological sort of experience. It's more of a physical experience. I've never actually had it myself, but I've heard some pleasant story.
Sounds grim. You drink all this water, and then you're just it burn onto your leg or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're just spew everything out. Awful.
Yeah. No, that doesn't sound super, super great, but I mean, I have not yet to try it, so I can't say anything for it, but.
Yeah. I mean, I my friends asked me a couple of years ago, and I was too scared to do it. I don't like being out of control or not in control. But now I don't actually mind. I feel like I've let go so much that I'm ready to take the plunge and see what comes my way. So tell us about how you guys work, because I find that really interesting.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I work for Behold Retreats, and essentially what we're doing is creating a service around the medicine. So the medicine is a tool, and it's a powerful tool, but what we really emphasize is the work that goes in before the retreat and after. Because a lot of this work right now, it's becoming very mainstream, and people are just heading out to the jungle to take ayahuasca, and they're not really, maybe doing their due diligence, or maybe they just don't know. It's really hard to gauge what quality is in this space because it's so unregulated. And I think they're underestimating a little bit of the depth of this work and how far it can go and how important it is to be prepared, how important it is to, have done the mental and emotional work beforehand to know about your intentions and what kind of expectations to have. And then also afterwards, the integration process, which is the most important, because without that, you can have these crazy, numinous, beautiful experiences and have no way of really anchoring them in your daily life. So you just end up, 2 months after going back to your same, terrible habits or behaviors that you didn't want in the first place or that you were trying to get past. And so what we do is really focus on that part. So we have a 7-week coaching program. And so we do 3 weeks of preparation. And that includes things becoming aware of what's going on in our heads, metacognition, this type of thing, and starting to change that already, starting to have these sort of shifts before we're going. And then learning to process emotions, because a lot of us don't know, and I'm sure you teach this in your coaching program as well, emotional release and how to deal with these emotions as opposed to repression, for example, because then when you go into ceremony, all of these things can come up, and if you're not equipped to handle them, or if you haven't released some of the more negative ones, then your whole journey could be just amplified. The plants are very neutral, but they respond to what's inside. So it's really important to sort of work through these things and start having these shifts beforehand so that when you go in, you can really get the most out of what the plants have to offer you. And then once you have a week-long retreat, so we work with, for example, psilocybin, magic mushrooms, ayahuasca, like you mentioned, and also San Pedro cactus and Bufo 5-MeO DMT, which is quite intense.
No,
you don't mix them. No, that would be terrifying. No, but that is the thing, that there are some retreat centers out there who are mixing a lot of medications, and some, you know, you don't want to. It's really one of these things where it's not about just shooting to the moon and having this like crazy experience and then taking the next one and having another crazy experience. It really is about the ceremony, the intentions, the space that you're creating in this retreat. And so, for example, in an ayahuasca retreat, you would maybe have, you know, 3 to 4 ceremonies and then integration days in between, rest days. And some medications are actually mixed. So, for example, ayahuasca is commonly followed maybe on the last ceremony with like a San Pedro, because San Pedro is quite grounding and it can actually help you integrate the lessons from ayahuasca in a more external anchored way. But so those are the medicines we work with, but each of them would be their own retreat. And then post-retreat, we have 3 weeks of integration. And so some of the most important work, I think, because when you go into these psychedelic experiences, you're changing fundamentally the way your brain is working, rewiring new neural pathways. And that's great. That's what's giving you insights. It's what's giving you these new perspectives on how to change your life for the better. New creative thoughts and problem solving, all these beautiful things, because we're so sometimes stuck into this like negative thought loop or repetitive patterns, right? So psychedelics can really like take you out of that by allowing parts of the brain that never spoke with each other before to speak. But the integration is now when you're going to really ferment that, not ferment, thinking kombucha. cement, that's the word I'm looking for. These new neural pathways to work. And so that's some of the most important stuff. So we're working really to reduce harm in this space by working with really high quality practitioners. You know, we have a team of advisors and, you know, we've done a lot of work to try to find really high quality people, because supply problem. The demand is there, but the supply for high quality practitioners is not. So, you know, reducing harm, finding really good people, having the proper medical screening and protocols, and then the support. The support's so important. So yeah, that's a little summary of what we do.
Oh, it sounds great. And what, so the one thing that you said to me the last time when we were talking was the space, obviously you mentioned it just there briefly, but the space is really important, because I mean, you might have coached with somebody before and the same emotion may have come up, but that space that you create is one that is not to disempower, it's to empower people and to make them feel safe. So tell the audience a bit about how you guys create that, how you're conscious of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there's, you know, setting, two of the most important things in psychedelic experiences. And, you know, the set is the mindset and the sort of expectations, perceptions that one might have going into a ceremony. So, and the setting is the physical setting. So both those things play a huge part in empowering the person. And, you know, in terms of the setting, again, this comes into some of the coaching we do, is it changing the victim mentality, you know, like this, the world is happening to me, to the empowered state of mind. So it's just switching that mindset, really getting people into thinking in a new way where, okay, it shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't, like, quote unquote, shouldn't, changing that word, taking that word out and say, oh, well, this is how it is. And I choose how I get to respond to this situation. I choose, you know, what goes on inside. And that really shifts the mentality from victim to empowered, taking control of the way you feel about something, your thoughts about it, for example, and changing those, just the wording even in your head to make it something that is not going to you know, hinder you while you're in this experience. And then actually going in and having these tools and these frames of mind into a ceremony really can create a deeper and more enjoyable experience. And then knowing when you're in the ceremony, when these emotions come up, because often challenging emotions will come up, you know, fear, anxiety, these types of things. But if you're in tune with your emotions and you're empowered to now allow them to be, and just realize that they're just a sensation, a vibration in your body, and they're going to pass. And it's not you, you know, and giving that sort of work and practicing these types of things when you're in a ceremony can make a huge difference, because then when you have this experience, you have the tools to let them go, as opposed to get deeper down the path of anxiety, which could take you who knows where, right? So that's those are some really important tools that we like to give our clients before going into a ceremony. And then setting is super important as well, because that's another thing we're noticing is, for example, there's some people hosting ayahuasca ceremonies and, you know, over 300 maybe participants. And that there's a lot of energies going around there. And it's not necessarily the best place for someone who wants to do some deep work, because there's projections from other people, there's different energies flying around, and you could pick up on someone's, or you could give someone's, like, it's just, you know, that's super important.
Messy, doesn't it?
Yeah, super messy. So that's something that we try to completely avoid, you know, nothing more than like maximum 20, but even that is on the high side. You know, we ideally like to do either private, if someone can afford private, obviously it's a little bit more expensive, or small groups, you know, 6 people, 12 people. These are much more manageable numbers, and yeah, it doesn't get as messy, like you said.
So I was going to ask, Susie, have you heard, like, have you ever considered doing the mushrooms? Like, from what Sarah's saying, like,
no, I never thought of. I guess you just follow what you believe is true for you, isn't it? I mean, I'm an ex-smoker. I used to smoke when I was younger, but it's never.
What would you do it now?
Well, I'm intrigued. I'm really intrigued because it makes you wonder what, you know, because it sounds quite organic anyway. It sounds like you know, a holistic approach to your emotions, because you know, you can hear all sorts about stuff, can't you? But I hear more on the pharma side, because obviously people are over addicted to tablets, aren't they, or addicted to something that actually makes them feel whatever. But I am quite intrigued to know, you know, like, what got you into it, Sarah?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can tell you a little bit about that. So actually, my ex-partner, he, when I met him, we were about 21, and he was suffering from some really bad anxiety and depression for as long as he could remember. Doctors gave him all sorts of medications, you know, antidepressants, anti-anxieties, and then they had diagnosed him with ADHD. So that was actually giving him more anxiety and depression with the Concerta that they were giving him, these, you know, or Adderall. Anyway, so he was on a concoction of medication, unfortunately, and that did not help anything. And when I met him, it was just, you know, it was really tough, panic attacks all the time, and it honestly felt a little hopeless at times. And about 3 years into the relationship, we came here to Amsterdam, where I am now. And we had a psychedelic experience with truffles, the magic truffles, because that is legal here in the Netherlands. And it was night and day. Like, I saw in front of my eyes just this paradigm switch, this light went off in his head. And he just, for the first time, saw his life from this entirely new perspective. And after that, we had a talk about it. And he was just so, you know, wow, okay, this exists, this type of way of thinking exists. Like, I don't have to feel this all the time. And so now he had this goal. He had this mindset and this attainable feeling that he could achieve just by thinking of things in a different way. And from that day forward, there was a lot of work to try to get back to this perspective. Like, you know, when he's having this panic attack, for example, can you remember this place? And what can you do to get back to it? Does it mean you have to meditate every day and do certain things? And all these like lifestyle habits and changes, they came. And, you know, he had a few more psychedelic experiences after that, a little bit more of a higher dose, which is typically what we would do in a therapeutical setting. And in a year, it took maybe a year after, and he was so much better off all the medications. And now it's been about 3 years since then. And he is just like, he's so great that the entire experience just, it was just so inspiring for me. And that's sort of what really made me realize the potential, the healing potential of this medicine, and how flawed the Western medical system is, that, you know, they gave this poor boy at such a young age Adderall that made him not sleep and not eat properly, which led him to feel this and that and et cetera. And it just like was a snowball effect. Whereas, you know, psychedelics, he was able to not only gain this additional perspective that he didn't have access to, but he was actually able to go into childhood traumas and resolve those traumas, because that's what this medicine does, right? It goes to the root. So it took him right to all of these things that he needed to address. And it was just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And then I realized I really wanted to help people. And this was like the powerful medicine. And then I had the experience.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention about the studies, because that's something that I think, you know, you were mentioning the mystical side. Mm-hmm. And so the mystical side is always going to exist. And do we need to know the answer to everything? The only reason why we have the studies in the first place is to satisfy the ego, right?
Yeah, so true.
Ultimately, like, so when I started doing my work and putting the course together, I was like, oh, I have to prove everything and this, that, and the next thing. And it was actually creating me a lot of stress. And now I'm like, no, this is what it is. This is wisdom that's coming through that needs to be expressed. And I don't feel like my ego plays a part in having to justify myself. Because I know that whatever anyone will do, they will get X, Y experience. That's how confident I am in it. And it's not because I'm coming from an egoic space. It's because it's tried and tested. It's not even tried and tested. It is the way it works.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Less people are worried about the scientific aspect, but in this day and age, in order to be taken professionally or whatever, then it has to be seen as ...
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, it's that logical, rational mind that wants to see the science and the facts. And but once you experience it, you can't even put it into words. It's ineffable. It's actually really difficult. I think for the clinical studies, it is, like you said, for the ego. And it's just so that people can trust it, and just so that it can become mainstream and legal, you know, being able to see this as a legal form of therapy around the world. I mean, just, yeah, they have to do the test first, right? Mm-hmm. But the part of the test that they are sort of, I think, missing is having this sort of energetical spiritual aspect to it, and not making it so clinical, because I think that almost can take away from the experience. But I mean, that's just a personal perspective. So
I agree. And I think the whole spiritual, like I was talking to someone ages ago, and they said, they were seeing some therapist, and they were like, oh, this person is like, you know, very spiritual. And I said, if your therapist isn't spiritual, are you going deep enough? Like, and I just feel like, again, it's seen as one of those things where it's optional, but if you have such deep trauma, if you have issues that like you can't maybe logically explain, then you know these experiences they don't need to be explained. Oh well, it's because you know your dad left you when you were a kid, and your mum just didn't give you the right. It's not necessarily that simple. And even if you do know what the issue is, oh, it's because I was abused. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I still feel shit. It doesn't change the way I feel. And so I think that's the difference between putting a plaster on it and just going, it'll be okay, and it never heals, to actually recognizing, creating awareness, shifting those energies and letting it go. And it's bizarre to me that we live in such, like everything is energy, yet we got taught nothing about energy.
Zero about energy, zero about our emotions and how to deal with them and process them. And yeah, exactly what you mentioned, I'm happy you brought that up, is you can have logically in your mind, like this happened to me, I know this is causing me pain, or maybe this happened to me, but it's just there. And that's so different than actually really dealing with what happened. So I had an ayahuasca ceremony, and for me, that really made me go into things that were in my body that I had no idea were there. So, you know, I was sexually abused when I was 18, and I knew this happened, but for some, I was like, that's not going to come up. I've dealt with that. You know, I've processed that. It's fine. Because as an 18-year-old, I just told myself what I had to tell myself to get through it. You know, everything's fine. It happened for a reason. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm great. I'm happy, you know? And instead of actually dealing with whatever emotions that were part of that, I just repressed them and lived my life like nothing happened. And ayahuasca showed me that no, this emotional pain, this vibrational energy of pain is in your body. It's stored there. And until you give that space to release from the body, I mean, it can manifest in so many ways, you know, feeling like you're not good enough, or feelings of not being safe, which create other, you know, these like limiting beliefs of, maybe in subconscious brain says, I'm not safe for some reason. That could make you act in so many different ways.
How does it feel like for you? Is that one of the things?
Yeah, I think it was for me, you know, not directly with relationships, fortunately, because I had such healthy, loving relationships. So it didn't really impact me there. But I do think it created this sort of sense of like not worthiness. And so having to always do something to show that I'm worthy, or to, for example, feeling safe manifested for me in a way that was like, oh, maybe, you know, worrying more about job or having enough money, or, you know, people looking at me a certain way and thinking certain things. It was just sort of like this underlying sense of anxiety, like, oh, I have to always be on guard, like always like having to protect myself in some way, and having a backup plan, and having this in the back of my mind. And it just takes up all this mental space and creates this sort of like cycle of never really like fully enjoying something, because in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, well, it can be taken away, or, you know, you're not going to be good enough to get it tomorrow, kind of mentality. And I think that's rooted in not only this trauma, but also, you know, some ancestral traumas, which also came up. And I didn't even know that was a thing that could be passed on energetically. And here I am experiencing my whole dad's like lineage family traumas. And that was heavy. That was so heavy, but it made so much sense. I'm like, of course I have certain mentalities with like money, for example, scarcity mentalities that I've had to overcome and still am overcoming, you know, shifting into that abundant mindset from a family that was very poor, probably had a bunch of traumas. You know, my grandmother, I think she was the youngest of 19 children on a poor farm in the southern Italy during the war. So, I mean, I can't even imagine what kind of things happened there, you know, and then coming to Canada, immigrating to Canada, there was a lot going on. And this all came through as shown as like this energy is now passed on to me and manifests in my life. So really giving that space. And it is confusing at first. That's, you know, this is again why I'm saying like this is such deep work that you might not expect any of these things. And it's very intense and it can be very overwhelming. And you know, the week after I was quite vulnerable. You know, luckily again, I have all the support. So I was able to work through it and really integrate this experience and give it even more space for release. Actually, I did some vocal liberation and family constellations work after this, and it really helped. And honestly, since then, it took maybe, I think, 3 months of like really integrating this and doing other things. And there is a sense of lightness in me. There's like this whole feeling that's just been lifted off, like a calmness. And, you know, I'm not anxious when I wake up in the morning to like go to work and maybe I messed something up, or, you know, I didn't get something done on time, or I'm thinking about, you know, all the other things that I need to do that I can't accomplish, you know, all these sorts of feelings that that would cause me anxiety before have just sort of just faded. And but it does take work, you know. It's not just going to ayahuasca, coming out and that's it. It's going to ayahuasca, realizing what happened, and now how do I really create space for this, and how do I create a new lifestyle and routine, which can include various things. Like I meditate, but I also started doing like journaling in the mornings and, you know, more affirmations and different types of things to help. And it's just been a great, great experience. Yeah.
You do feel like you are, not that I knew you obviously before, but
yeah.
you do feel like a really calm, like level headed person that just goes with the flow. That's what how you come across, how you feel.
Oh, thanks.
So you do not feel what you described.
Yeah, it is a repression thing though as well. That's, you know, that's my bypass, is I have like a really positive mind, but I repress emotion. I avoid negative emotions. So that's something that the medicine has helped me, and through coaching. Actually, the coaching program is really what made me get into that at first, because I realize that I have all these emotions that I've just completely shoved down because, yeah, my mind likes to be a positive place, but that's bypassing, you know? So that's something I learned before actually going into my ceremony, was to give space to these emotions and to allow them to be. So one method we use actually in the program is the letting go method. So there's a psychologist, Dr. David Hawkins. I highly recommend his book and his work, and he works at the emotional vibrational scale we spoke of before. And yeah, it's really life-changing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, once you learn how to actually let go, you don't realize how much you're holding on or how you're suppressing. Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? Because I remember like at my worst point, I still thought it was positive. I didn't even think I was a negative, and I didn't think that I was a problem. So it's mental how you see yourself in these things, like where you just like convince yourself otherwise. It's like, oh no, I can get myself out of this situation by doing X, Y, and Z. And it's always external, external, external. But actually how important the just changing your vibration is, it is a game changer.
It is.
Then just applying these psychedelics as part of everyday life, like, you know, something that people can do like not weekly
maybe a little bit.
But although I'm saying that, one of my old clients, when I was a personal trainer, he's started to invest in one of his friends who basically lives in a woods somewhere in like near like London. And he doesn't switch on his phone at all. But when he does, it's like to do something and then he's off the radar. And he has started to do this thing where it's like microdosing and chocolate. So I don't know if that's going to be like a daily, like eating chocolate, you know, with your coffee, microdosing, because I think that's kind of proven to reduce like, but I guess it's like CBD oil, you know, the cannabis oil. Is that right? CBD or CBD or whatever it is.
CBD,
But it feels like, again, that, I don't know if that's like another way, because I've never really used it at all. If that's just another way of suppressing like alcohol, it's not really dealing with it. What do you?
Yeah. The microdosing, I'm sort of on the fence about because I think it can help someone who's maybe in a very unbalanced state come to a balanced state so that they can start making the proper changes to continue it without microdosing. So it's one of those things that, you know, I think should have like a means to an end as opposed to a lifelong pursuit of microdosing, because I think, like you said, it's just adding, it's just covering up something. I don't think, you know, having to take something every other day or whatever the protocol is for microdosing long term might not be, you know, dealing with the root cause, but it might help someone who's at a level that they can't even, you know, they can't even have any realization because they're so all over the place, that that could help take them to a level where they're able to then get the help they need or make the changes. So I see it in that way as a positive thing, but I really believe in, you know, more of the ceremonial use of psychedelics, just because, you know, you're going to these root issues, and then the whole purpose is not to like go on a bunch of retreats, you know, it's, that's why, you know, you go on one long retreat and then you do the work after and you commit, you know, a few hours a week to be doing this work, and then, you know, the changes should be sustainable. And that's that's the goal, I think, to make the new baseline, your new baseline, you know, awareness, something new that you can now take with you without any other substances.
Yeah. I agree. I think that you're right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. Really enjoyed.
Oh, thank you for having me. And you should come on a retreat sometime.
I really, really do want to.
yeah, you really should. We're actually starting to, well, I mean, we have our retreats here in the Netherlands for psilocybin. And then we also have retreats coming in Portugal and possibly Ibiza. So that could be a nice, beautiful place.
All right. I thought it would only be like, I don't know, in like Bali or somewhere. So it's...
No, Bali is actually not legal to use psychedelics. No.
What? Why do people go to Bali then? Like,
just a yoga haven, I guess. I'm sure it happens. I'm sure there's medicine there, but I don't, it's definitely not legal. Mm-hmm. So psilocybin's legal in the Netherlands. And then in Portugal, basically everything is decriminalized. So you can have ayahuasca, 5-MeO-DMT, which is bufo, the toad, and psilocybin. And then Spain is sort of like this gray area where it's unregulated. So ayahuasca is, there are retreat centers and we have, you know, the resources to do in Spain as well. But we're actually thinking Portugal is sort of the better option for us. So I mean, be hosting
Portugal is good
retreats in Portugal.
Really close. It's close by. It's cheap as well.
Yeah, like, and it's beautiful. And our retreat center there is just absolutely stunning in the forest and it's just gorgeous. And it's a really special place. So and there'll be a couple medicines there, ayahuasca and 5-MeO-DMT, which is nice. And otherwise you can go all the way to Costa Rica or Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I think that's too far to travel at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
Hopefully speak to you soon.
Yeah, have a wonderful day. Thank you for having me.